This is the LarryNFishers.com podcast. I am Larry Lannon, and I have, I think, the best public safety panel I've ever had for any podcast. We have Mayor Scott Fadness here and the police chief for the city of Fishers, Ed Gephardt, the fire and emergency services chief, Steve Arusa. Just to each of you, thank you for taking the time out of a very busy day for each of you to talk to me today. And the first order of business, but we're going to talk mostly about the solar eclipse. There are lots of issues related to that. But before we get into that, there was an announcement made earlier in the day. We're recording this on March the 12th. And the morning on Monday, March the 12th, it was announced that Steve Arusa will be retiring after over 12 years as chief, 14 years with the city of Fishers. Chief, just want to congratulate you, first of all, as one retiree to another, at least soon to be. Just curious, why the decision to retire now?
For a couple reasons. Probably, you know, any leadership position that you have is a gift, and you got to be a steward of that gift. And if you're being a good steward of it, you've got a succession plan, and you're investing in the future, and you're investing in the next set of chief officers. And at some point, you got to get out of their way, right? Because they're always going to tell you, "I'm not comfortable, I'm not ready." So, but if you get out of their way, now they don't have a choice, right? So, I definitely married up, and my wife brought that to my attention. And in addition, she brought to my attention that I'm 63 and I've been doing this since I've been 21. And, you know, we need to spend some of the money we saved and relax and have a little fun with that. But I'm really excited about, you know, the fire department, the trajectory of public safety in general is so positive. I mean, the things that we're doing things that other departments aren't doing. So I'm excited about the future and the future leaders that we're going to get to lead it in the right direction.
And Mayor, I know that you made some written comments on social media posts earlier in the day. Just your thoughts on Chief Arusa and his tenure here.
Yeah, well, I personally think that being the leader of a public safety department in a growing and changing community is probably one of the most difficult public service jobs you can have. It's this constant equilibrium of, are my people okay? Is the administration okay? Are the politicians okay? Is the community okay? And you're constantly balancing that. And Steve's done that for over a decade, which is really unusual to have someone in that role for as long as Steve has and tried to affect a significant amount of change in an industry that doesn't want it. And that's not an easy task. So, you know, Steve's been by my side since I was deputy town manager and he was ops chief fresh out of Chicago. Talking about how we would change the organization, what we would do differently. And we were the dog that caught the car because we were fortunate enough to have that opportunity. And so, well, I'll be forever grateful for his tenure here. And, you know, the transition, he's been kind enough to stay on long enough for us to really do that and do it well. And there are a lot of big questions about what the future holds for that department. And so we're going to be very thoughtful and very methodical as we deal with that. And Steve's committed to stay on at least until his next beach vacation.
I'm sure they'll be more frequent.
So we'll work through that. But I, you know, honestly, the community and my administration owe him a debt of gratitude for his service.
The only question I have about that is, will you do a nationwide search, look internally first or close to home? Do you have a plan yet?
No, it's too early to say what I'll do in regard to that. But these are big shoes to fill. And that entire command staff structure needs to be reviewed, and it's an opportunity to take a fresh look at things. And what that looks like, I don't know yet, but I'll be rolling up my sleeves and engaging in that in the weeks and months to come.
Police Chief Gephardt, you know, I've covered news in many communities. In some places, there's a little rivalry between the police and fire. I'm not saying it doesn't exist here at all, but I found that you and the fire chief and the staff, each of you oversee work together as well as could be expected, I think.
Yeah, I think there's definitely you're always going to have fire and police kidding back and forth and, you know, losing and winning at softball and what have you. And I think when it's time to roll up sleeves and go to work, the staff, the entire direct staff, including Steve and I, public safety, play small roles in the larger scope of what needs to get done. And I think when it's time to go to work, we're always good about getting the job done and going to work. And when it's time to kid, it's time to kid. So we're able to progress a lot of things, you know, taking command and taking ownership of the EOC in that direction is all coming out of the firehouse, and we've adapted and embraced that, and it's how our city operates. So I think that it's been a good leadership team, and we'll continue to be moving forward.
Let's move to the main subject of this podcast. A new term has been entered into our local vocabulary, path of totality. Path of totality means you're right center square where a solar eclipse will be. That means that sun is going to be totally behind the moon. Fishers and Hamilton County will be in that path of totality on Monday, April 8th. Let me ask each of you how you're preparing for this. I would assume, Mayor, you've already talked to other mayors in the area. Maybe mayors have experienced this, have been in the path of totality before. What have you learned as to what to expect on April 8th?
Yeah, this was not something I was personally tracking until my team came to me and said, hey, are you aware of the eclipse and what it could mean to our community? And at the point, to be honest with you, I had no concept of what an eclipse means to a community. And they shared with me some of the traffic volumes and things of that nature. I think the largest takeaway from what I can gather, and these two are far more informed and better educated to speak about it, but it's just a lot of people in a condensed area. They're not violent people. It's not an outrageous kind of group of people doing wild and crazy things. It's just a lot of people here to bear witness to something that happens so very few times in history. And so it's a logistical challenge, you know? And that is really what I think our public safety team has been diligently working on over the last 6 to 8 months, is really how logistically are we going to deal with an influx of a significant number of people.
So Chief Arusa, obviously you have been talking with others in your with the work that you do, and have probably talked to people who have been through both path of totality before, mostly large crowds. As the mayor said, we're not talking necessarily about disruptive crowds, hopefully not, but just large numbers of people who want to see a solar eclipse be in that path of totality. And there are people who travel the world and go to these all around the world. So based on what you know, how is your department preparing for this?
Well, it's actually not one department. As the mayor stated, we've been meeting for 6 to 8 months, and it includes everyone who would be in our emergency operations center. We've got parks, we've got communications, we've got law enforcement, we've got public works plays a huge part. So in really, it is exactly what the mayor said. You have a lot of people in a small space. People have to be able to move. People have to be able to eat. They need to be able to go to the bathroom. They need to drink water. So how do you manage that? Well, you manage it like you manage on a daily basis, but you look at what other communities have experienced and you try to learn off of those. So we've been doing a lot of research. I think we have a really great plan, the mayor and his team, all those that I mentioned. We've got an event action plan, which is compliant with the county's emergency management plan. So I think we're as prepared as any community can be. But even on your best day, if you're prepared, stuff can happen, right? But I'm really confident about the resource support we've had, the leadership support, and all the department heads working together. So I think we're going to be okay.
You know, Chief Gebhardt, when I've talked to people who have experienced Path of Totality, I think the most recent report I got was somebody who wrote to me who resided in Kentucky in 2017. They were in the Path of Totality. Once the eclipse started to ease and move off, they had unbelievable gridlock. You couldn't move in that area. People had filled up not just the major roads, they filled up every side street. You really couldn't go anywhere, which that just thinking about that, where your units can't get around, for example, or just managing that traffic. How do you prepare for a thing like that?
The mayor's buying us a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
just breaking here, yeah. in all seriousness, that's not true. Look, that's part of the planning process. So for us, I think probably a year ago, we started getting at the table and we looked at the plans from Kentucky and Wisconsin and other areas that have had this. And the joke always is, it's Steve and I's job to over-prepare and worry, and then it's everybody else's job to bring us down from that during the event and see what it really is. So like Chief Arusa said, we have plans to place officers and firemen together out and around the community to make sure we can respond to our community and provide the services and the expectations that they already have. In addition to that, we have strategic plans in place to deal with gridlock and heavy traffic that we almost certainly will probably experience. And it's the 6 to 9 hours after the event that is what we're planning for the most. The 3 minutes or so that it's going to be over our city, I'm sure everybody will just be looking up, and then it'll be time to go to work. And I think we have a great plan, and as a team, collectively, of all the people already mentioned, I think we'll be more than ready for that day.
And Mayor, dovetailing what the police chief just said there, local residents, as I understand it, and I checked on this, I think this is correct, should be able to begin to see the eclipse something around 1:45 in the afternoon on April 8th. It will peak around totality, that's the word they use, around 3:06 p.m. That should last 3-4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as the police chief said, some people may hang around to see it. Others are going to want to go home right away. So that would have to be the big challenge. So just as you think about what your chiefs are having to say, what you've been briefed on, biggest challenges for the city once that path of totality moves away.
Well, there's a life safety component, and then there's a convenience component in my mind. The life safety perspective is gridlock, and let's say your loved one's having a cardiac arrest and Chief Arusa's team needs to get there to get them and get them where they need to go. So unless something bad happens in terms of like bad behavior, the biggest life safety concern is just the ability to get to someone in need and get them to wherever they need to go. So they're working on plans to, you know, create pathways for us to at least have those opportunities. The convenience one is more of a conversation about how do you get a big traffic jam solved when it's not one particular specific spot or issue. You know, most traffic jams are a car accident on I-69 backs up traffic. Well, there is no specific issue here. There's just a lot of volume. And so, you know, there's no real relief valve. It's just going to take time to deal with that. There isn't, to be honest with you, there isn't a lot that Chief Gephardt or Chief Arusa or DPW can really do to solve for that. That just literally is a function of time and it sorting itself out. I mean, there's just nothing these guys can do to accommodate 100,000 new vehicles on the road. It just is what it is. What I would say is that what's been really interesting for me to watch a subplot to this, Larry, that I think is really encouraging is, you know, Chief Arusa's spent his entire career in emergency management. He's been to floods and tornadoes and everything in between. Chief Gephardt's been a SWAT team officer for many years. What I appreciate about both of their efforts this go-round is that the point people on actually putting together this plan are not the two of them. It's actually a younger generation of police and firemen. And this is a great emergency, if you will, to train the next generation on how to deal with it, because it's not in the moment, right? We're able to plan ahead and we're able to work through that. So, you know, when we met to be briefed on what the plan was, it wasn't Chief Arusa and Chief Gephardt presenting to me. Instead, it was two of our young up-and-comers in both the police and fire department. That's a great opportunity to build some skill sets and some experience for men and women who haven't had the opportunity to be in those roles.
You know, Chief, you and I talked before we started recording about the importance of having an emergency plan and updating and so forth. This is a situation, as the mayor said, it's not an emergency in the sense you know it's coming. So now you can plan for that. Talk kind of dovetail what the mayor said, how some of the younger members of your staff are helping in preparation for this.
Yeah, well, we updated the Fishers Emergency Operations Plan in 2022, and how we exercise it, and we talked earlier, you can have the best plan in the world, but if it's shelf ready and it stays on the shelf, all it does is get dusty. So you got to take that plan out, you got to take it around the track, kick the tires, and how we do that is we do workshops
where we look at the plan and re-educate ourselves. Then we do a tabletop exercise where everyone sits around a table and we have what ifs. This actually happened. Let's walk through all of our areas of responsibility. And then after that, we do a functional exercise. We kind of – it's not a large-scale exercise where you bring a bunch of people in and a bunch of apparatus, but you sit in a room and you test one component of the plan, and maybe that's communication. So with the eclipse, communications is a big deal because there's cell phones, Wi-Fi, a lot of those things may be vulnerable. So we have to create a communications contingency plan, a crisis communications plan, where do people go to get accurate information because there's going to be information everywhere. So that's why it's so important to have us all working together. And we do those workshops, tabletops, and functional exercises on an annual basis. This year it's the eclipse. Next year may it be a line of duty death, and who knows after that. But as long as we keep doing that, we'll be ready to serve.
Well, and to your specific question, Larry, where it's so powerful is the two guys that are running point on this for us, neither one of them would have ever, for the most part, interacted with other departments in their day-to-day jobs. But in this scenario, running point, when they're at those tabletops, they're getting to know – well, how does our communications team work? You know, how does IT function? What about parks and recreation? I got to work with all them. Granting our up-and-comers the opportunity to interact with all the different departments is really a great, great opportunity to train the next generation.
You know, Chief Gephardt, I just saw a news story just before I came over here, and it dealt with something that Chief Garusa talked about, communication. It's not so much that the solar eclipse is going to cause some atmospheric problem. It's that everybody is going to be on their cell phones at the same time. Everybody's going to try to stream video at the same time. And when that happens, systems tend to go down. Now, I'm thinking that your radio communication should be okay in terms of that. But in terms of contacting people through the internet or the extent your department uses the internet, there are forecasts that that could be a problem, at least for a large period of time during that path of totality that comes at 3:06 p.m.
Yeah. I think that in any operation that you have of any scale, which is why it's good that future leaders are getting to see this because they're learning how to plan and get ready for events that are going to happen after this. So I think it is a great tool. But also, they're going to go through the process and have to vet out problems and scenarios and issues that arise. And in any scenario of anything, phones will go down almost expectantly. And I think that we have good plans for that. The city's thought of that. Our teams have thought of that in terms of how do you get a hold of 911 or how do you get a hold of dispatch. And I think that the on the day of, you'll see people have the ability to reach out for help and get help. And I think there's going to be an education curve on our community too, because if they can't find that help, they're going to find ways to get that help to them either through word of mouth. And that's why we're staging people out in the community. They're not going to be sitting in buildings where they can respond to people closer in proximity. And we have upwards of, I think at this point, 70 officers plan to be out. So some of that is you may have to see an officer hail one down and then we can get fire, get whatever we need or whatever resources. So we are planning for communication to be down because that is always the number one thing that goes down.
So do you plan on using those drones? I had demonstrated to me the other day.
We do, and thank you for showing up for that. We appreciate it. And our drones will be up. They will be out. It's a functional tool of the city, and they help us to have eyes on things. And in this instance, it'll help us with traffic and traffic direction and flow coming in and out of the city.
You know, Mayor, one thing that happened, this happened last year, HSC schools decided to extend spring break a day. So that at April 8th, that Monday, April 8th, will be an additional day tacked on to the spring break. I didn't think about that at the time, but at first it was like, well, students could be at home, they can enjoy it. But thinking about this now, if there's gridlock, these school students might not get home till 8 or 9 o'clock at night. So that will be some solace relief that the buses will be off the road that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just think of how many police officers get tied up doing traffic for the school end of day. I mean, people would be leaving the schools at the exact time of the eclipse too, which would also be a nightmare. I think it was an appropriate decision by the schools to extend. I do want to say a word of caution here. I mean, I want Fisher's residents to enjoy this historic moment. I think these two, their job is to always consider the worst, and they'll plan for that and we'll be ready appropriately. But I also don't want to turn this into you know, lock yourselves in your basement with your transistor radio scenario.
It's not a nuclear.
It's not a nuclear, yeah. Like, go enjoy the opportunity. Be there with your family. Be patient. Exercise patience, right? I mean, it's going to take some time to deal with this, but we have thought of many, many different contingencies, and I just want Fisher's residents to go have fun and be situationally aware.
Yes, I remember there was a big blizzard in Indianapolis in the late 70s, and I worked at a radio station. One of our reporters was in downtown, and he was talking about how things were quiet and things were eerie, and we said, his name was Frank. Frank, we didn't get hit with a nuclear bomb.
Right.
It's snowing. It will stop snowing
right,
at some point.
Exactly.
So don't let this get to you. Chief Arusa will having the school buses off the road help you as far as being able to respond if something does happen?
Less traffic, the better.
Yeah.
You know, and we've planned for that. You know, we'll have some public safety corridors. We're dispersing resources across the city. So we're doing the best we can.
Chief Gebhardt, there have been a lot of things published in terms of tips and things to watch out for the solar eclipse. Here's one that struck me. Do not stop along highways or emergency shoulders. So if you get stuck in traffic and you want to see the eclipse, don't stop in traffic or pull off on an emergency shoulder. I think that's great advice, and it's something at least that would help you not have to deal with that issue.
Yeah, and I think that the advice comes from all the other communities. Or I don't think I know. Comes from the other communities on what they saw as people converge here. And what will happen is it'll be – if it's cloudy in southern Indiana, it could drive more people to us if it's sunnier and vice versa. So you just have to plan for the most and give people the warning. It's not that we didn't want people to be out. We just want to let them know if you are out – be patient because it's going to take a while to get around. Same with our parks. We're leaving it open to pedestrian traffic and so forth. It's not that we don't want people to enjoy it. We're just trying to get people ready for probably in the harshest tone of what might happen, hoping that it doesn't happen.
You know, Chief Gephardt, one other question for you right here, because I've also seen advice to turn your headlights on. I've been through a solar eclipse a long time ago, and it does sort of seem like night. The animals are going to be very confused, just as an example. But should you turn your headlights on when things get dark?
Yes.
Okay. That's a direct answer. Thank you.
One thing that we've been trying to educate businesses on is just – in residence to expectations of response. So it's not that people can't have events. It's not that people can't be enjoying each other or anything like that. But if you're upset about someone parking in your, let's say in your business's parking lot, and you call the Fishers Police Department and say, hey, I want this guy, you know, taken out of my parking lot. We're trying to be proactive in our educating people on the expectations of what we're literally going to be able to respond to and not respond to in that 6 to 8 hour period. If we can respond, we will. But we also want to warn people the likelihood of us being able to get there for those kind of minor things may not be there. And so people should just, again, exercise some patience and caution if we literally say, we appreciate your call, but we can't get there.
You know, Mayor, one thing I thought about, and I talked to Layla Carey, who's the editor of Curt and Fisher, and she made a point to me that on average, on that date, April 8th, in this area, there's normally about a 40% chance of clear skies. So it could be overcast, which will certainly take a lot out of it. However, I did look at the extended forecast, which is about like flipping a coin.
Right.
But as it stands right now, it looks like clear skies on April 8th. Now, we get closer to the things may change, but Mayor, will the weather forecast have any impact on your planning in terms of the skies?
No. I mean, we'll plan for sunny skies and we'll plan for the absolute, I guess worst is maybe not the right term, but the busiest possible scenario so that we're prepared one way or another. We're staffing accordingly and that takes a degree of sacrifice. So Chief Arusa and Chief Gephardt, they have to tell the men and women of the police department and fire department that would normally maybe be a day off, but today it's not. You got to be there no matter what. But we'll prepare for those inevitabilities.
Well, I've asked all the questions I can think of for a solar eclipse. Chief Arusa, anything you want to address about the eclipse before we leave that subject?
No, I think echoing the mayor's statement about have fun, enjoy it. We've got a great plan. No worries. But if you got to get up and go in your car somewhere, you're going to have to wait.
Chief Gephardt.
He covered it.
Okay. I will ask you one quick question on this, Mayor. There was a decision by the city not to have a city-sponsored event. Conner Prairie is having probably the biggest gathering in this area. Why did you decide to stay away from that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there are plenty of private venues and opportunities for people to go enjoy themselves. Our parks, Chief Gephardt mentioned, will be open to the pedestrians if they want to come do something in one of our parks. We just really didn't want to draw any resources away from our opportunity or ability to respond to critical issues. And so we felt like for the finite amount of resources we have, those should be directed towards responding to whatever the issues that might come up that day versus adding to more issues that might be there. I still think there's plenty of venues and opportunities for people to engage and recreate if they so choose.
Very good. I want to go to leave the eclipse for a moment and go to Chief Gephardt. Chief, you over the weekend put on social media a letter to the community about an event that happened March 3rd along 116th Street. The way you just, you put the letter together, you estimated about 300 cars showed up unexpectedly. There were some things that happened that appeared to be against the law. I just want you to elaborate a little bit. Why did you feel it was important to tell the community that and explain what you and your department are doing in response to that event?
Because I owe them transparency. And we got calls from the community. People notified dispatch of drag racing and these vehicles in and around, not just in one particular location, but they were strung from probably far west of Allisonville and 116th all the way over to the district and yard along the entire corridor. We have these events in smaller areas that are unsanctioned or that just show up, and we can handle those. But 300 puts a certain amount of tension on the resources that are allocated. And it was alarming to not just the police, but it was alarming to the community as well. And these sorts of things are continuing to escalate. We already have a lot of racing and speed and things going on in our community that we're addressing as a police force and as a city collectively for our community to be safe. Add on top of that, adding multiple cars that are up here for those reasons. And then when you get into the atmosphere, what happens? Then it brings other people in. And these groups advertise on social media, so they cast a net of whoever wants to come to Fishers to have this car meetup, let's do it. There's a permitting process in the city of Fishers that have these car shows and allocate resources and work together collectively. This is not that. This was not groups. This was probably mixed with some car enthusiasts that got together to show off their vehicles that brought a wide range of different vehicles from different locations. So from everything from total gridlock of businesses where businesses couldn't conduct business as usual to kids all the way along the top of the garages in our city watching this happen and putting themselves in danger as well, I saw a need to let the community know that, one, we're aware, and two, the steps that the police department is going to do to deal with it moving forward. I think that this can be the start of something worse if we just allow this to continually happen without some sort of communication, collaboration, or known of this is how you conduct yourself in our community. Everybody's welcome here, and we want everybody to come to this city and enjoy the amenities that are here. But what we won't tolerate, and I think I stand in unison with my mayor on this, is the breaking of laws and ordinances that our city has to keep our community safe. We won't tolerate that. And so we had to go out this week, work with our businesses to be good partners for them, to understand what we can do moving forward if this happens again, and we're more prepared. Not that we're unprepared to respond to it, but definitely being partners with our businesses help us to be able to move this group along into other locations
other than here.
Well, one quick thing. You did suggest that these businesses get no trespassing, no loitering signs. How does that help your department respond to this?
Puts them on notice that when they park there, and in particular, it's the no loitering sign that I'm most interested in. That's what you will see moving forward. That puts them on notice automatically that that business is saying, hey, not here. And that allows us to do our job quicker, to disperse the crowds faster rather than having to come down. And usually people who are employed at the businesses can't really speak to management or ownership of certain businesses or properties. You have to find those individuals. You don't have to find those individuals because we found them. We're working with them. And the next time we will be able to know exactly what we can and can't do if and when this occurs again.
And Mayor, you looked like you had something to say.
Well, I think the over-communication probably over the weekend was really about a national narrative. If you've watched the news over the last year or 2 years, you've seen a lot of larger urban areas, this kind of phenomenon of these meetups where people get together, large groups, cars, people, and reckless activity starts to occur. What happened over the weekend is a reflection of that in some regard, and I think what Chief Gephardt and his team were communicating to the public was that we're aware. And obviously, we're not going to tolerate that type of activity, and we're going to put the framework in place to address it. And so I think you'll see steps moving forward to do that. But I think it's more of a national narrative, this kind of phenomenon of kind of these groups that just move about and do some nefarious activities. So I think it's the appropriate approach moving forward.
Well, the Indianapolis media has covered this. I know the IMPD has worked hard. Mm-hmm. They've had problems in certain areas, and they have worked on that. Mayor, while I have you here, I want to ask you about a story that was in the Indianapolis Star the day we record this. It had a whole list of about 10 different communities offering incentives to move to their city with this whole work-at-home trend that we have. It's one thing to bring jobs to your city. Maybe the job doesn't have to be at your city for to have somebody incentivized to come. One city, I was a little surprised to see that was Noblesville, which offered one of the highest in terms of money value of incentives, $15,000. Now, it's not cash. It's relocation reimbursements. It's golf club memberships, co-working spaces. I think we have an issue with the library here. Yeah. Hopefully we're not in an emergency. But a $15,000 incentive to come to Noblesville. In Fishers, that's a community right next to us. Do you foresee any possibility you would look into something like that?
Well, I know this concept's becoming more popular across the country where we're all racing for talent, so to speak. I don't see us doing this anytime in the foreseeable future. Our focus is really trying to build a quality of life and an amenity package that would be attractive for people to want to be a part of our community. And I think that's where we'll spend the majority of our resources and time and effort, is trying to build a product that really speaks for itself. I mean, I continue to wonder, you know, do people make life decisions like where they're going to move based on, you know, those types of things? I don't know the answer to that. I certainly haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it, but I don't see us doing that anytime in the foreseeable future.
One quick question while we're here. Summer season is coming up, and one question I've been getting from a lot of my readers: have you made a decision yet on whether to continue the $50 parking fee at Geist Waterfront Park?
I've been working with park staff on that. That will be reduced, and we're coming up with a new scenario. I think we'll be bringing it to council sometime in April, I think, at the council meeting. So there will be adjustments, and I think the team's put together a really good plan, and we're excited about the fact that we have some additional capacity, and some of our concerns that we had last year about, is this thing going to get swamped by people, has been alleviated. So I look forward to rolling that plan out in April.
I have Steve Arusa, last question of this podcast. Mm-hmm. Not only are you retiring in the coming months, you've just lost John Melling. Mm-hmm. Who's just retired as we speak. In fact, just a few days before we do this, I had a chance to do a podcast with him just a day before he retired. I mean, I've known John, dealing with him as somebody who writes a local news blog as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. He's always been very good to me, and I know he has worked with people throughout the community, and I know your department will miss him.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I got here, we really didn't have We didn't modernize external affairs and public education and public information. And John was the pioneer of that. And he really modernized it for us. And he put us in a very enviable position compared to other communities with the job he did. He's going to be missed. And he's going to be difficult to replace.
My great thanks to Mayor Scott Fadness, the police chief for Fishers, Ed Gephardt, and the soon-to-be-retired in coming months Fire and Emergency Services Chief Steve Arusa. Gentlemen, thank you so much for a great podcast.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.